Welcome, Michael, to Writers Series.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
Can you share a little bit about your background story of how you were introduced to the craft of writing?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I did not set out to be a writer, honestly. I always felt like I had some things to say. There were conversations I wanted to have with the world, to start with the world. And I knew that writing a book would be one way to have those conversations, but I wasn't sure it was the best way or the right way or the way that was the way I would eventually choose. About, let's see, it was 2019, so 4 years ago, I just kind of decided to get out of my head about it all and sit down and start writing about what it was that I had to say. And so that was really my journey. I just kind of figured it out on my own from there. I stumbled my way forward. I made lots of mistakes. I still make lots of mistakes. But 3 years later, I published that first book, and now I'm thinking about starting the next one. And we'll move forward from here.
Well, your book, The Forest is the Tree, is very interesting because it does shed light on perspective. And what I found very interesting is that you've gone through an evolution of a belief system. What were you taught as a child and as you embrace adulthood? Appears that you were raised Christian and then you went through a phase of atheism. And what did you discover about yourself and life in the process?
Being raised Christian and Lutheran, and I was all in. We went one day and we went to Wednesday night church events and vacation Bible school and summer camp, and my parents were good enough to send me and my siblings to Lutheran schools. So I got a lot of it growing up for the first 20 years. I chose to go to a Lutheran college. And it was, looking back on it now, I just see that it was a really comfortable sense of belonging. There was just community. It was never questioned. Everybody trusted each other, and sort of the price of admission was, your belief in the theology. And in college, I just started questioning the theology of it. It didn't make sense to me anymore. And eventually, I realized it wasn't even a decision that I made. I just realized, oh, I don't believe this anymore. And I didn't realize it at the time. Again, looking back on it, that was a very deep wound. Like an emotional and spiritual wound that I was dealt, and I didn't know it at the time. At the time, I was just sort of, I don't know, a little smug, I guess, about the fact that I just figured something out for myself, I just, again, I didn't realize it at the time, but the next 10 years, I don't know if I ever would have called myself an atheist, but that's probably what I was. I just didn't believe anything about myself or the nature of reality or why we're all here. And that, maybe that was some kind of shock that I needed to go through in order to heal from the wound that I re received. But it was about 10 years later, and I sort of woke up and realized, wait a minute, this is not all there is. It's not just work and friends and buy a house and manage your finances and do that for 60 or 70 years until you die. Like, there's something more that seems to be going on here in reality. And I don't even know if that was at the forefront of my mind when I decided to write this book. But certainly I have now realized that that is an inseparable part of who I am. And that's going to show up in everything I choose to write from here on out.
You said that the price of admission at one point, and this does happen often on a global level in various societies, was theology. What, in your opinion, is the price of admission to living life today, given everything you've lived through so far?
Am I speaking for myself?
Yes.
I think the price of admission is looking ever deeper into who I want to create myself to be in the future. It's not taking on it anyone else's or anyone else's reasons or anyone else's beliefs, but it's looking at who I am and where I've been and what I want to choose to create in the world and then moving in that direction. That's the only thing that makes sense to me right now.
Everything happens in the present, the past, and the future.
Everything. They don't exist.
Yep. And going back to your book, The Forest is the Tree, how would you define your style of writing?
I very consciously decided to make The Forest is the Tree sound like a personal conversation with me. I talk a little bit about myself in the book, but I don't think the book is about me. But anyone who reads the book, I think will come away from it. I hope they come away from it feeling like they had an intimate conversation with me. And one of the things that I worked really hard on when I was writing The Forest is the Tree, and I don't know if I ever really figured it out, was who am I writing this for? I thought that I was writing it for intellectuals because I myself am sort of an intellectual, and maybe that works to a certain extent. But looking back on it now and looking forward onto the next book I write, I really think my audience is going to be people who are willing to change their mind. And so you asked about my writing style. It's always going to be a conversation, and it's always going to be about not just the things that are important to me, but the things that seem like they must necessarily be important to humanity as a whole, moving together into the future. I mentioned earlier that I'm trying to create my life and myself as I move into the future. That, it seems unarguable to me. That is the same thing that humanity is doing, that we as a collective are doing. We are creating ourselves and we are deciding what the future is going to be that we create for ourselves. And right now, that is one that is rife with conflict and suffering and waste. And I hope that we can recognize that and choose some healthier ways of being for ourselves, for the planet. And that's what I write about. That's what I'm going to try to write about.
The use of our conversations, the conversational style in the book. There are some books where there's a conversation going on between the author and there's some other person responding, like a stream of consciousness. Or are you having this direct conversation with the reader
I'm
only?
trying to have a direct conversation with the reader. I have a bad habit of living in my head and having conversations with myself, or really imagining having conversations with other people, but really I'm just talking to myself because I play the whole thing through in my head and I decide what they'll say and then I decide what I'll say. And that's not living in the real world. That's not living in the present, like I write about in the book. You can see that I am talking to myself to a certain extent when I say, be here, pay attention right now. And so I really tried hard when I was writing the book to encourage the reader to notice their own experience of reading the book. And I don't know if I've ever read a book by an author that did that. And I have heard from a number of my readers that the experience of reading the book was at least close to what I was going for, was that of having an intimate conversation with me. And I really hope to be able to figure out a way to continue that because a book is necessarily one way, isn't it? All my conversation happens in the words that I wrote. All the reader's conversation happens in their head in response to the words that I wrote. I am going to figure out a way to end with my readers so that I can hear that side of the conversation and that I can respond to that in the things that I write in the future. And in the work that I do in the future, that is the most exciting thing to me. I certainly don't have it all figured out, and my readers certainly don't have it all figured out, and humanity as a whole doesn't all have it all figured out. But the point is that the only people we have are each other, and that is what we got to move ourselves forward into the future.
Given that your book covers interesting topics on a global level, it could be considered self-development, spirituality, food for thought. What is the genre of the book? Did you approach it from a nonfiction or fiction perspective?
I consider it to be nonfiction, and I think it's firmly in that category. As far as a more specific genre within nonfiction, I've struggled with that a bit, and I've gone back and forth with some different ones. But what I call it right now is pop philosophy. I think I'm talking about ways reality shows up to human beings, what human beings are. And I got that from some of my readers' feedback too. I thought about self-help. Thought about personal development, I thought about spirituality, and none of those seemed like a fit. But pop philosophy really feels like this is an ongoing conversation about how we might look at ourselves in the world and the way that we relate to each other in the world.
Is there any particular lesson that you learned during the writing process when you were penning the book, whether it was the technical aspect of it or your perspective to it, something changed?
It was the most important thing that I learned about the process of writing during writing the book was that I had to block out a chunk of time every day to work on it. And for me, the most effective time to do that was first thing in the morning, right when I woke up. The book that I wanted to write required me to sort of get out of my head. And the best time to do that was when I wasn't 100% awake. So early in the morning, I would get up and I'd make my coffee and I'd sit down and I'd write. And when I'm not 100% awake, I'm a little less analytical, but still articulate enough to write. But I'm much more in touch with my emotions, which was such an important aspect of what I wanted to talk about. And that is a huge lesson that I've learned about myself in the past 10 years since rediscovering a spiritual way of looking at the world. So that was the solution for this book. For the next book, it may be different. We'll see.
Is there a writing tip that you have either discovered or created that other writers could benefit from?
This was my first book, and the biggest challenge was starting. I could have sat there and thought about what I wanted to write for my whole life and never written anything down. And so I had to start before I felt like I was ready. And that was expensive in terms of process. I don't think I was as efficient with this book as I will be with my future ones. I probably wrote 400,000 words over the course of 3 years, and the book is 50,000, which isn't a great ratio. It's not very efficient. But I can already see that that's what I needed to do in order to get over my fear. That was the huge thing that was in my way of starting this book, was the fear of it not being good enough or getting it right. And the only solution that I could figure out was just to go, just to start and not to think about it too much. Now that I've written and published that book and gone through all of that, I can see that it's nowhere near as frightening as I made it out to be before I had done it. And so I can see for my second book that I'll be able to sit down and put together an outline and be more deliberate about choosing my audience and writing to them, doing research, talking to potential audience members to find out what they see they would need out of a book, and reading other books that are close to it to get an idea of what's the conversation that's already going on. So anyway, I'm really giving your question two answers, aren't I? To your listeners, if you're thinking about writing your first book, I think for me, the big obstacle was overcoming my fear. So my advice would be just start and don't think about your fear. If you're writing a second book, I think my advice would be take your own advice about what you learned writing your first one.
Michael, you're also establishing yourself as a speaker. Do you anticipate that you're going to be a writer that speaks or a speaker that writes?
I've never thought about that. The one that resonates more is the second one, the speaker that writes. The important thing to me is the conversation. It's the dialogue, because that's what creates the future that we are living into. I never, like I said earlier, wanted to write a book, and I don't really want to be a writer. It's just that writing seemed to be the only vehicle to jumpstart this conversation that I want to be having, that I want people to be having, that I want humanity to be having. So really, I think speaking is going to be a more dynamic, engaging, and fun way to have that conversation with people. Writing is okay, but it's very lonely, or it can be anyway.
That is a comment that I've heard over the years from different types of writers, being left alone with your own thoughts.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it, that a book is something that goes out into the world seeking connection. And yet the process of producing a book is very much an individual sitting by themselves for a long time thinking about something. And you wouldn't think that that's connected to this desire for connection, but writing, the fact that books exist, the fact that language exists, the fact that writing exists is constantly surprising to me. Just that I could have spent all of that time sitting by myself at my kitchen table and can connect with people who didn't even know I existed and who will be reading these words at some point in the future. It's just a kind of magic to me. And I don't know. I think that says something really important about the human condition, though I'm not sure what it is.
But you appear to be a philosopher, Michael. And finally, in your opinion, what makes your writing unique?
I think the only answer I can think of is that I try to show up as authentically as I can in what I write without making the writing about me. Nobody else could write what I write. Nobody else has experienced what I experience. Nobody else can hear the thoughts that are in my head. So I hope that they're valuable to people. That is why I put in the time. Yeah.
Are there any new exciting projects that you're working on? And you're welcome to let listeners know where they can support your work.
Well, life has been crazy in the last 10 months. We had our first baby, and so I've been trying to figure out how to be a dad and fit everything together in the schedule. And I think I'm just starting to get the hang of it. And so I have not done any writing in the past 10 months, and I've really been missing it. And I have some plans within the next few weeks to start carving time out of the schedule. So that's the first answer. Second answer is the book I'm going to be working on next is going to be much more targeted at the audience that I mentioned earlier, people willing to change their minds. It's going to be much more specifically about my own area of expertise, which is Christianity, leaving the church, and then sort of coming back to a new understanding of and relationship to Christianity and Jesus. The book is going to be more specifically about that, and it's going to be more specifically in service of my vision for the future, which is a world no longer divided by religion. That has nothing to do with there not being religion or being certain religion. It just has to do with not letting religion divide us anymore as a society or as individuals, which was a lot of my experience with it over the course of my life, being divided by it. So that's the first part of it. The second part of it is where can people connect with me and find out more? My website is still a work in progress. It's michaelmarvash.com/project. It's where you can find out what I'm working on. But really, what I want to encourage you to do is read my book and then send me an email because I want to know how it sits with you and I want to connect with you. And let's start there. And then I can keep you up to date on how the next book is going.
Thank you, Michael, for joining us on Writer Series.
Thanks. It's been wonderful to be here.